That's the one that we receive not into our house. We don't give a greeting to, because we would be partaking of that error. And that's the only thing that applies to. And is what that does then is that eliminates a passage that shows us how to deal with error if we limit it to just that. So I'd like to look at this doctrine of Christ a little bit, and I think we can build a Bible case that is a little more general than that. Yes, in this specific case, certainly in 1 John and 2 John, he's dealing with the error of those that are denying Jesus in the flesh. But I think that what's referenced here in verse 9 is talking about more than that. And we'll give the reason why. If you just look at the language, doctrine of Christ or teaching of Christ, just from the statement of the language or the layout of the language, it could mean either one. But if we look at the context and we look particularly how it's used throughout the New Testament, this term doctrine or teaching, it gives much more an indication of the teachings that came from Christ as opposed to just this specific fact about Christ. Let me give you a few examples and then I'll open it up for comments. Acts chapter 2 and verse 42 says they continued steadfastly in the apostles' teaching and fellowship and in breaking bread and in prayers. Not about what the apostles, who they were, but about the teaching that they were promoting, namely, the gospel message. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 12, I think this one is particularly effective. Then they understood, Jesus was speaking to the apostles, then they understood that he bade them not beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching or the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Again, here he's not talking about who the Pharisees and Sadducees were, where they came from. He was talking about those things that the Pharisees and Sadducees were legislating on the common people. That's how he was using the word teaching or doctrine there. If you jump into John specifically in his letters, that trend continues. That's how he uses that word. John chapter 7 and verse 16, Jesus therefore answered and said, "My teaching is not mine, but his that sent me. And if any man willeth to do his will, he shall know of the teaching, whether it is of God or whether I speak of myself." So if you want to know what God's will is, you're going to listen to my teaching. It's not a teaching of who I am, that I am God's son, necessarily. It's a teaching of how to be pleasing to God. So again, the doctrine that is coming from Jesus. John chapter 18 and verse 19, "The high priest therefore asked Jesus of his disciples and of his teaching." Again, the things that he was teaching to his disciples, the things that he was saying, these are the things that you need to put into practice. And another good example, specifically from the writing of John, is Revelation chapter 2 and verse 14. "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there some that hold the teaching of Balaam." Okay, so is this the teaching that about Balaam, who he was, or is this the things that Balaam was instructing others to do? Well, let's read on. Who taught Balak, and then he lists specific things: to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit fornication. So thou hast also some that hold to the teaching of the Nicolaitans in like manner. So John, when he talks in his writings about the word doctrine or teaching, he's talking about things that whoever's that teaching is associated with, those specific lessons. It's not something about those. It's not a teaching about those people. It's what they're teaching. And if we come all the way down and narrow our focus down specifically to the book of 2 John, it's not going to be so much on the word teaching here as much as it is the context. In 1 John and 2 John chapter or verse 2, he's talking about, "For the truth's sake which abides in us, and it shall be with us forever." His emphasis there is on the truth. Verse 4, "I rejoice greatly that I have found certain of thy children walking in truth, even as we received commandment from the Father." Verse 6, "And this is love, that we should walk after his commandments." This is the commandment, even as you have heard from the beginning, that you should walk in it. The emphasis there on the whole body of work, the truth, the commandments, not the one specific fact of Jesus coming in the flesh. And I would say that gives a reasonable pattern that as we move into chapter verse 10 and 11 of this book, it's that same emphasis on the doctrine of Christ. And we have other passages that we could go there as well, that we're talking about what He is teaching. So I wanted to bring that out. I know we rushed through on Sunday. Any comments regarding that? Sam? Yes, I believe we're giving, in general, approval to that person and the things that they say. And I think we have to be really careful. I know that Facebook is a relatively new phenomenon for us, and some people just don't make that connection that's still a form of communication that's public, and they don't realize that. But yeah, I think that's very much true. Kevin? Mm-hmm. Very good point. And another, just a fact about the word doctrine and teaching in the Bible. We've talked about a lot in the books of 1st and 2nd John, as Kevin just mentioned, the word abiding. And we've also talked a lot about exactly Jesus came in the flesh. When John wants to talk about Jesus coming in the flesh as a point of do this or don't do this, confess this or don't confess this, the language he typically uses is that of Jesus came in the flesh, or confess that Jesus did not come in the flesh. He hasn't used this word doctrine before to describe that particular facet of what he's trying to say. In fact, the only two times that doctrine or teaching are used in these epistles of John are here in verses 9 and 10. Again, giving some credence, I think, that he's talking about more than just that specific facet. In this case, that is the point of emphasis, without a doubt. He's saying, even those that confess not that Jesus came in the flesh. But I think he's talking about more than that. Other comments on this abiding in the doctrine of Christ? Mr. Westbrook.
You know, the Old Testament, same
principles there. Yeah, there's an established Bible pattern, particularly in the New Testament, speaking about the teachings of Christ. So this passage fits nicely with those, I think. Any other comments? Trevor? Very good. All right, so the conclusion that we can reach from this abiding in the doctrine of Christ is don't go beyond what Christ has said. Stay in that doctrine. Hebrews 1:1, we won't go there for the sake of time. God spoke in previous times through prophets and other various manners, but in these last days, He's spoken through His Son. There's a revelation He made through His Son, and He expects us to hold on to that. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 7. Again, we won't go there for time's sake, but Paul says, you've heard the gospel of Christ. If anybody, even an angel, brings you a different gospel from that, he's accursed. There's something specific that Jesus has brought when He came. That's what we're to abide in. That's what we're to hold on to. So one that teaches that error does not abide. He does not dwell in the Father or the Son. And so the conclusion for that is don't accept those that would deceive in that manner. Don't accept them into your house. Don't give them greeting. And if you think about that, where did a lot of churches meet potentially in the early days of the church? They met in houses, didn't they? So every aspect, don't have them into your house and act like everything's okay. Certainly if you have a church meeting in your house, don't give them access to that. Don't give them a home base there to promote whatever they're teaching that has gone beyond the doctrine of Christ. So take care of that. Because in doing so, as Sam has pointed out with the application of Facebook, we're in essence putting our stamp of approval on there. Think about Acts chapter 15, when Paul had to go back to Jerusalem to deal with the teachers that came circumcising. Preaching circumcision. One of the points that was made when they got back to Jerusalem, that was made from the leaders there in Jerusalem, as they sent that letter, what did they say? They said, no such doctrine came from us. They made sure that stamp of approval was not there for them. You know, you could see those brothers preaching circumcision saying, we come from Jerusalem, and this is what we're telling you. And the folks at Jerusalem were saying, no, that's not the case. Don't give them that support. So he said to be very careful in doing just that. Sam's already brought out Romans chapter 16 and verse 17. And I think I brought out Romans chapter 1 and verse 32, all those folks that were doing wicked things. It's not about just doing the wicked things, it's giving consent to those that do them. Don't allow them to have your approval. because when you tolerate it, it's just like you're practicing them as well. Any final comments before we move on what he's talking about there, about the doctrine of Christ and not giving that greeting? Kevin? Very good. All right, so he finishes up with these closing remarks. We won't spend much time on that. He wishes to write many more things to them, but his hope instead is to come and see them face to face and talk to them face to face and have that interaction with them, that their joy may be full. And he sends greetings from the group that he is at as well. So he closes that book saying, I hope to see you soon, and we have more things that we need to talk about. Any closing comments on the book of 2 John? Kevin? Okay. All right. The book of 3 John, you'll notice which with each introductory material that I give on these is getting shorter and shorter. I think we've about exhausted all we need to say about where these come from and when they were written and what their general purpose is. So this will be pretty short as well. This was obviously written by John based on the same evidence we provided for 2 John, namely the similarity between those of his other writings. It was written about the same time. The difference this time is that it was written to a specific individual, an individual that was very well thought of by John, by the name of Gaius, an individual Christian. There's several Gaiuses that are addressed or mentioned in the New Testament. I don't know that we can connect him to any one of those in particular. There was one from Macedonia, referenced in Acts chapter 19. There's one from Derbe in Acts chapter 20. And then there's also one from the area of Corinth. So at least three other Gaiuses, not an uncommon name in the first century. We don't know that this was any one of those in particular. But this is very much a letter to an individual. It's a good example of that. He's writing to him, gives him a commendation, and speaks specifically to him the things that he has to say. Purpose is pretty simple. It's a short letter. And first of all, he talks to Gaius and he says, you've done good, particularly in the areas of hospitality. Please continue to do that. You don't know how much that it means to me. And then he gives a warning against Diotrephes, who was apparently there in the area, either at the same congregation or close by, and was doing some things that were not helpful at all to the cause of Christ. And he said, watch out for Diotrephes. When I come, I hope to deal with him personally. And then he commends to him Demetrius, who may have been the one to deliver the letter, but he says, look for good examples, not bad examples. Here is an example of a good man, Demetrius, and I commend him to you. And then he has some closing thoughts. So really, a short book, but there's surprisingly quite a bit in it, particularly about what type of Christian a complete Christian is. I'm astounded as I study this, the man that Gaius was, or the man that is revealed to us in the character of Gaius in just these few short verses that we have of him here in the book of 3 John. Let's read all the book. It's just 14 verses. We'll just read through it once here at the beginning. 3 John, the elder unto Gaius, the beloved, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that in all things thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and bare witness unto thy truth, even as thou walkest in truth. Greater joy have I, none than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth. Beloved, thou doest a faithful work in whatsoever thou doest toward them that are brethren and strangers withal, who bear witness to thy love before the church, whom thou wilt do well to set forward on their journey worthily of God, because that for the sake of the name they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. We therefore ought to welcome such, that they may be fellow workers for the truth. I wrote somewhat unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, received us not. Therefore, if I come, I will bring to remembrance his works which he doeth, prating against us with wicked words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren. And them that would, he forbiddeth, and casteth them out of the church. Beloved, imitate not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God. He that doeth evil has not seen God. Demetrius hath the witness of all men, and of the truth itself. Yea, also we bear witness, and thou knowest that our witness is true. I had many things to write unto thee, but I am unwilling to write them to thee with ink and paper, or ink and pen rather. But I hope shortly to see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be unto thee. The friends salute thee. Salute the friends by name. So jumping right in, just a brief greeting. Gaius was very dear to John. He loved him sincerely. That's the same. He loved him in truth. That's the same greeting he used to the select lady in 2 John, the opening letter there, whom I love in truth. It appears to be that he genuinely and sincerely had good affection for him. And he said, I'm praying for you, Gaius, that you will prosper. Gaius was prospering very much spiritually. He was like the man in Psalm 1 and 1 who's doing the things that God wanted him to do. And the result was, in verse 3, he shall be like a tree planted by the streams of water, brings forth its fruit in season, whose leaf does not wither, whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Gaius had it figured out spiritually. He was doing the things that he needed to be doing. He was demonstrating, as we talk about in a little bit, that he both understood the genuineness of the love that God asked for when he said, love your brother, and he understood the mechanics of doing the truth that God asked for when God said, love your brother or follow my commandments. And John's hope and his prayer is that Gaius' physical health and his prosperity would match that of his spiritual health. Now, wouldn't that be interesting if that were the measure of our spiritual prosperity, was the reflection of our physical health? Or our physical prosperity, what would you and I look like if that were the case? Would we look weak and sickly, or would we look strong and virile, and would we be wealthy? Was just an interesting comparison as he put that down there. Made me think a lot about if he was that prosperous spiritually, and the desire was for him to be that physically and also in his health, what would we look like? I think that's an application for us to think about. So, caught my attention there. But he had figured out, particularly what Jesus said there in Matthew chapter 6, around verse 33, of seeking the kingdom first, not worrying about the other things, but putting the kingdom first in all of his life. And so Gaius was a good example of that. Gaius had a very good report among the brethren. Those words had come back to John wherever he was located at. People had come and they had been with Gaius. Perhaps there seems to be an indication that these folks that he's showing hospitality to were those that were going out evangelistically and preaching the word. And Gaius was supporting them in that, either in the receipt of them as they passed through, or perhaps even providing provision for them. We'll talk about that here in a little bit as we move on. But he was doing the job. And when those folks came back around to where John was at, they were saying, wow, we met Gaius, and Gaius really helped us out. Gaius was really an encouragement to us, and he took care of us. And another, just lots of applications in these short little verses of what we need to be in practice of a Christian. And how encouraging is it for us when we hear that somebody that we know somewhere else is doing the work of God and doing the service that a Christian is supposed to do to his fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. And we need to work so maybe those that know us from other places, and then somebody passes through and then that comes back around to them, that they'll receive that same good report for us. To be working hard and to receive that report that is due is an encouragement to everybody involved. Certainly it was an encouragement to John, and then John had a chance to send it back to Gaius and say, hey, what you're doing is useful. It's helping people. Keep it up. So think about that as the reputation that we keep in our actions. And Gaius was also very sincere both in he was sincere in his walking in truth, and he was accurate in his walking in truth as well. Look particularly in verse 3, last part of verse 3, he says, for I rejoice greatly when brother came and bear witness unto thy truth, even as thou walkest in truth. And the idea there is not walkest in the truth as much as it is back towards the beginning, walkest in sincerity. Genuinely, he had figured out those words that we talked about in 1 John chapter 3 and verse 16. Hereby we know love, because he laid down his life for us. He was demonstrating that laying down the life for us the sacrificial love. First John 4:10. Not that God loved us, but that not that we loved God, but that he loved us, and that's how we ought to love one another. Again, he was genuinely showing love for his fellow brother. And that's what John was so pleased about. And not only that, he was walking in the truth. A little bit turn of the phrase, he was actually doing the things of the truth that were given to him. John 3:4, greater joy have I none than this, to hear of my children, in this case Gaius, walking in the truth. And we've talked about what the word walk means. It's the whole manner of life. It's what you're busy doing. It's what you're occupied with. And you could see, or John could see from the reports that he's getting, that Gaius was abiding in this truth that he had been received. And that was being added back to him. Comments or questions on what Gaius was doing, the life that he lived? I think there's lots of real world applications for us just in those couple of verses of, you know, particularly about reputation and the joy that brings to others when we do what God asks us to do. Todd, did you have? Yeah, he seemed to have both aspects of it put together. He understood what was required of him, and he understood the why he needed to do it. You know, that love, that sacrificial love that God had, he had that same type of love. I heard another voice, was it Mr. Westbrook? Yeah, I think that's a right application of that, and I think in this context it's good evidence that Gaius was doing just that. He was providing provision as well as hospitality to these that were preaching along. Other comments? Trevor? That's a good point. That's actually one that I intended to make as well and hadn't made it yet. But think about that as we think about, and this may be a little different than what Trevor's talking about, but as we think about those of us who have children and they're growing up and they're learning the Word of God, they're learning the service of God, what do we take joy in them doing? Do we take joy when we get the comment, and speaking of John getting a good report about Gaius before? Okay, when the Bible teacher comes out and he goes, you know, so-and-so, your son really had his lesson down. He understood what the message was. He made good application. Do we take joy in that spiritual growth of kids doing what they're able to do as their ability allows them? Do we take more joy in that than we do in, say, some of the successes that they may have out in the world, whether that be in athletics or in school or whatever progress they make there? Are we making sure that we are putting the emphasis to our children on what's important as they grow as they're supposed to? And not just our physical children, maybe those that are young Christians among us or new converts among us. Are we putting the joy, are we recognizing that joy and taking good joy and passing that on to them, saying, I really take joy in seeing you grow up spiritually like you're supposed to? So I think that's a good point. Brad? Yes. Yeah, I think that's the specific thing that they were testifying back to him, and how he was behaving was consistent with the truth in total that he had been taught. Other comments? I think we're close to out of time. Let's see if that's a good point to stop. I think that's probably a good point to stop before we do. Unless, does anybody have other comments up through verse 4? All right. Well, we won't proceed any further than that. Then we'll pick up with verse 5, Lord willing, on Sunday. Thank you very much for your comments. They were very good.